lost people, and I fail to see them as prisoners of sin. But you know, shipwrecked people are prisoners in need of help. And there are days, I admit it, there are days when I just would rather say, please keep floating. Please don't get stranded on my island. I know there's one down the road. Right? I have other plans and I have other responsibilities, and these are shipwrecked, lost people, and they're cold and they're hungry, figuratively speaking. And they choose to get stranded on my island. Now, I know that you ladies have opened your hearts and your homes to those who are shipwrecked prisoners. I know you have. And we can't feed and warm them all. But earlier in this story, back in chapter 27, we're told that those on the ship gave up all hope of survival after 3 days. And then the storm continued. And I thought about all the ladies who have crossed my path, who storm continues, who have given up hope, and they're groping to hang on, and they're trying to keep their heads above water, and they are looking for an island of refuge. They're out there everywhere, aren't they? It is not necessary for me to go out and hold up a sign that says, island, refuge, fire, come here. I don't know how they find me. But they do. You don't know how they find you, but they do. And some of them have been in a storm for so long that they really don't know how they're going to stay in that marriage one more day. In that situation, they don't know how they are going to deal with that addiction or that child or that issue any longer. And they are shipwrecked prisoners of sin. And somehow they show up on our island. And the Lord said to me one day in reading this, aren't you fortunate that you already live on the island? And I'm not the one floating. I'm not the one hanging on to the board of the ship and hoping I'll reach some kind of safety and hoping that my head can stay above water in that shipwrecked, lost situation. It was like he said to me, you already live on an island. You can welcome somebody to your island. Well, that's one example. I just look at this and I think, oh my word, a group of hosts who showed unusual kindness and hospitality to these prisoners. We're always thinking about, you know, my husband, that is always thinking about, well, epitaphs. What would you like written about you? What would you like written about you? I don't want anything written about me yet, but she showed unusual kindness. Wouldn't that be a blessing? She showed unusual kindness. I've gone back to chapter 28 of Acts, verse 2, many, many times, and they showed us unusual kindness. Well, there's another example of serving here. And we see it in verse 3. And it is a man who picks up sticks. Now that sounds easy enough. That sounds like something that most of us could do. Our family has enjoyed tent camping for years. We tent camped from Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin to Seattle, so we could all go to the National GRBC Conference. It was the only way all six of us could go. We loved it. Now, my children tell me that I have better memories than they do. That happens sometimes, doesn't it? My son one day said, "Mom, you keep talking about how wonderful that trip was." He said, "I don't remember it being as good as you said." I said, "Oh, it was wonderful. I had a grand time." But anyway, upon the arrival at a campground, there were various tasks assigned to each person. I mean, some got the tent set up, some rolled out the sleeping bag, somebody rolled out the sleeping bag, somebody got the supper started, you know, somebody went and got water. I mean, there were six of us. Everybody had their task. But everybody was assigned to pick up sticks. That wasn't one person's job. Everybody was to pick up sticks. And you didn't just do it once. Every time you went to the outhouse, you were expected to come back with a few sticks. Every time you went on a walk around the campground, you were expected to come back with sticks. Why? Because our warmth, our campfire enjoyment, our food depended on the fire. And so that was just part of it. And it wasn't just a need and we said, "Now somebody needs to pick up sticks." No, we all did that. The last week of September, I mentioned today that I was in my mother's wedding back in April. And it was a wonderful blessing. My dad went to heaven about 9 years ago. And my parents did not have a good marriage. They had a 45-year marriage, but they did not have a good one. And the last thing my mother wanted was to get married again. And then the Lord brought a wonderful, wonderful Christian man into her life. And we thank the Lord every day for bringing Bob to our family. And my mother is experiencing enjoyment of life that she never had before, and it's been a wonderful thing to watch. 4 weeks ago, my husband and I met my mother and Bob at a state park in Kentucky. It was halfway, and we camped for 4 nights. My mother had never done that. She never sat around a campfire before. It was so much fun. But all I keep hearing from my siblings, we all have different pictures, but every time somebody from my family comments on our family, on our camping trip, they say, "Yes," and they said, "All you did was pick up wood. You always came back with an armful of wood." I thought, well, we wanted the fire going 24/7, you know, so we had to have wood. It's illegal to take wood into another state, so for a campfire. So you have to get it once you get there. But we had a wonderful time, but part of it involved picking up sticks and bringing them back to feed the fire. And so Paul saw a need, and he assumed responsibility for it. He didn't say somebody needs to pick up those sticks. And I look at you ladies, and I see ladies who have picked up a lot of sticks. You might think some of them were twigs. and some of them were logs. You've cared for children. Some of you have cared for husbands. You have cared for other ladies. You have prepared lessons. You have taught lessons. You have cooked and provided refreshments. You have written notes. You have offered encouragement. You have shown hospitality to believers and unbelievers alike. You've stayed in the nursery. You have prayed. You've done a multitude of things that constitute picking up sticks. All of those sticks, whatever the size, they fed the fire of ministry. And the burning fire of ministry, I wish we could have one right here. We'll just pretend there's a fire going. But the burning fire of ministry, it's a goal and it's a blessing. If you're involved in a ministry that is warm and offering refuge and nourishment to others, bless God for that. What a blessing to be involved in a ministry that is providing warmth and nourishment to those who need it. And we want the fire of our ministry to be kept alive so it can continue to welcome the shipwrecked prisoners of sin, the prisoners of loneliness. Okay, we're not just talking about unbelievers here. The prisoners of loneliness, the prisoners of despair, the prisoners of weakness. The fire is the lighthouse, and the sticks that we pick up, they feed that fire. One of the interesting reflections of my life has been the way that the phases of life change, and most of you can relate to that. You know, as we move through life, all of a sudden, it's different. It has changed. For the first 25 years, I had children at home, and I needed to give a great deal of time there. Today, I don't have any children at home, and I have other ministries. We don't all need to do the same thing. We don't all want to do the same thing. We who are older, though, we need to continue our involvement, even though the specifics change. My sticks are different than they used to be. But I dare not just stop picking them up. Well, the story doesn't end there. After Paul picked up sticks and fed the fire, which was a very commendable thing to do, what happened? He got bit. What did he do wrong? All because he did what was right. Human nature, and even though I know better, I still fall into this trap. Human nature says that when you get bit, ask yourself what you did wrong. Right? It can be little. The washing machine breaks, that's not so little. And we say, what did I do to deserve this? What did I do wrong? We're really weird in that way. Lord, I had my devotions. How could the washing machine break? I mean, that's ridiculous. We tend to think disease comes. What did I do wrong? Prodigal child. How did I mess up? trouble in different relationships. And wait a minute. Of what do I repent? Do you know what I'm saying? Now, there, if we have done wrong, we must repent. But what I want to try to encourage you with today is that what Paul did was right. It was commendable. Paul did what anybody should have done. He picked up sticks and added to the fire. And when he did, the snake came out and bit him. Do you notice who it didn't bite? It did not bite the people standing back, saying, somebody needs to pick up sticks. They didn't get bit. Only the one who did it. Ladies, it's a sad reality, but it is a reality. And it's a sad fact of ministry that those of you who pick up sticks and walk the closest to the fire, you will get bit. And it won't be because you did something wrong. It will be because you did what was right. You won't get bit every time. And some of the bites won't hurt nearly as much as some of the other ones. But you will get hurt at some time along the way. Maybe you'll be bit by criticism. Maybe you'll be bit by false accusations. Maybe you'll be bit by misunderstood motives. I don't know. But it will come in some form. I encourage you to remember that it's not because wrong was done. But it's a reality of ministry. When you serve, and when you are involved, when you are active in keeping that fire of ministry going, there will be a bite. You don't stop because of the bites. I want you to see what Paul did. See, there are snakes in the bundles of sticks that we pick up. Whatever it is, you make refreshments and somebody won't like them. I already know that. I know just about what everybody doesn't like. It's okay. I didn't do it for that reason. Right? I know just about everything I do that somebody could do better. That's okay. Paul knew all about that because Paul had been bit before too. He had been bit by imprisonment and false accusations. And those really do hurt. So what was Paul's response? Now, please understand, I'm not trying to exegete this passage and say that this is the primary application for this or anything. I'm not saying that this is the reason it was written. I'm just trying to draw some very practical things from this that maybe we could see, okay? Verse 3, he gathered the bundle of sticks, he put them on the fire, the viper came out because of the heat, fastened on his hand, and when the native people saw the creature hanging from his hand, they said, oh, he must be a murderer. Now they'll do that too, right? Oh, see what happened to her? I wonder what she did wrong to get that. Happens, ladies. And verse 5 said, he, Paul, shook off the creature. Do it with me. Okay? Ready? Do it again. He shook off the creature into the fire and suffered no harm. I thought, oh Lord, could I do that? He cast it off and he let it go. And when people saw that the bite did not destroy him, then they changed their opinion about him. I thought sometimes my response to the bite is enough for people to think I did do something wrong. But he cast it off. They saw that it didn't destroy him and they changed their opinion about him. And then, only then, did the door open for any kind of ministry. And after that, Paul had opportunity to pray with an influential man and to be very instrumental in that man's healing. That never would have happened without the bite. He could not have reached that point. You see, Paul didn't know. I'm convinced he did not know that picking up sticks would lead to a snake bite. Nobody would pick up a stick if you thought it was going to lead to a snake bite. So he didn't know that. But he didn't know that picking up sticks that would lead to a snake bite would lead to healings, would lead to salvations, and I believe would lead to the planting of a church. We don't know that for sure in Scripture. It does not say that a church was born from there, but Paul stayed there for 3 months. What do you think happened? They stayed there for 3 months. Other people kept coming to him. Do you see that in verse 9? When this had taken place, well, look back at verse 8. You know, Paul visited him and prayed and put his hands on him and healed him. And after this took place, the rest of the people on the island who had diseases, they also came and they were cured and they also honored us greatly. I think there was a church there. So out of this island of unbelieving hosts who showed unusual kindness, Paul puts sticks on a fire, and out of the warmth and the heat of that fire of ministry, he is bit. He casts it off. And from that, and only after that, the people give him attention and honor him and come to him for help. And there are healings and salvation and a church. Only God does that. Only God does that. Ladies, you already know this, but let me remind you that we never know how one act of service, one meal, one visit, one preparation of a Bible study lesson, one invitation to a neighbor, we never know how that is going to be used by God. Those are those sticks. We never know. Now, some of those sticks are like deadwood. And they don't return anything that we ever see. But we never know what God is going to use. And please remember, you may get bit as you do it. That doesn't mean that you did the wrong thing. It doesn't mean that the Holy Spirit never led you to that. It doesn't mean that God was not directing you. It simply means that there was a snake in the bundle of sticks. And not everybody's going to appreciate it, but ladies, we don't have any idea how God is going to use it. You know, no matter what our individual ministry is, and we're all involved in ministry a little differently, based on giftedness and location and other things, But every one of us needs to be serving as one who's picking up sticks. Now, my sticks will look differently than yours. Okay? Andrea has two precious little boys at home. Her sticks are going to look differently than mine. But your sticks are just as important. Mine are no more important than yours, and vice versa. And you and I are equally as responsible to put those sticks on that fire of ministry. And as her sticks keep the fire of ministry at First Baptist Church in Fenton going, and she's not the only one picking up sticks, but her sticks keep it going too. And it just keeps that ministry a lighthouse for those shipwrecked prisoners of sin and loneliness and discouragement. It gives them a safety. It gives them a refuge. And along the way, not everybody's going to like every stick you pick up. That doesn't mean that you weren't supposed to put it on the fire. Right? I want to be somebody who keeps picking up sticks, knowing the risks involved. How many times are we tempted to say, that's the last time I'm doing that? Okay, I did that once. I'm not going there again. We're tempted, aren't we? When I get bit, I don't want to pick up that same stick again. But oh my, ladies, knowing the risks involved, we still need to keep feeding that fire and see how God uses the warmth and the light that that lighthouse gives off. There's so much more in this passage. I feel like I want to stop and just allow you to respond a little bit, because there are so many things that I haven't brought out from this passage. And again, my purpose is not to just exegete the passage, you know, and get everything out from every word. I'm not trying to do that. I just want to give you kind of a picture of what could be a secondary application of this passage, and to encourage your hearts. I was married to my pastor for 31 years. Right now I don't have one. I have a husband, but not a pastor. So my husband still is. But what I'm saying is, in 31 years as a pastor's wife, there were a lot of bites. I might still have some scars from some of those bites, but not one of those bites ever caused this arm not to be able to pick up sticks. It didn't incapacitate me at all. You know what I'm saying? It's not a lifelong wound. There are some scars. But we can still go back and pick up again. I can't stand here and guarantee to you that while you reach a certain point of experience or ministry and you don't get bit any longer, because it's just not true. But remember who the fire is for. The fire is not just a campfire for our own enjoyment. The fire is the lighthouse. And you understand, we're just kind of making a symbolism with a picture there. But the warmth of that ministry and what it can give to those who are shipwrecked, we have no idea. What are some of your thoughts? Even from this story, I mean, from, don't tell us all the ways you've been bit. Okay, that's not what we want. And I don't want to do that either. I acknowledge there have been bites, but it's not anything that where we have to share all of that right now. But how have you seen God overcome some of that? Or any other thoughts from this, principles that you would share with us? Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Good. Anybody else?
If anyone's hurt, thank you.
Thanks so much. Very good. You, when you are bit, you look to the cross. You know, you don't remember very many times in your life when you grew because things were going well. You don't. I trace every significant lesson or area of growth in my life back to, yeah, that was when. And it's never a great situation. It was when something was hard. That's, we know that. That's life. I can trace certain steps of growth back to correspond to certain bites. They do. God in His kindness puts those there. He allows those in our lives and He uses them by His grace and kindness. And kind of an immune. I don't want that much venom. Yeah. We don't want that much venom inside of us. Yeah. But you're right. You're right. And sometimes certain things don't sting as much. But I don't think you ever get to a point where they don't hurt. They still hurt. Even some things I think shouldn't hurt as much anymore. They sure still sting. Yes. Oh, thank you for sharing that. And you ladies know, I'm not saying shake it off and act like it didn't matter. No, that's not it. No, shake it off in a way that says, I won't allow this to control my life. Yes. Did you catch that? She said He wants us to use those hurts for His service. We don't want to pretend it didn't hurt. But we're good at that too. I really appreciate these things that you're sharing that just enhance this even more. And it's where we live, isn't it? And in ministry, it is where we live. I love ministry. I love it. But it is what it is. And we love it, and yet we know what comes with it. And knowing what comes with it should not cause us not to love it. And it should not cause us to run away from it. But let's embrace it. Where it is, what it is, delighting in the Lord, allowing Him to help us love it, but to be realistic about it. And understand what it is God has called us to do and what may come our way. My heart breaks for Christian ladies who turn inward so often when something happens that really is just a part of life. You know, everybody's children get sick at some time. I mean, not with the same degree. I'm not making light of anything. I mean, everybody's washing machine breaks. Everybody's car breaks, you know, at some time. It's not because we were doing something wrong. But we do often, Christian women, I've heard so many times, just immediately turn inward. What did I do to deserve that? Why did this happen to me? What was I doing wrong? Nothing, necessarily. Look at your heart, and if there was not sin there that prompted that, shake it off. He works all things together for good. As we love Him and are called by Him, that's what He does for us. I'm the outsider here. You ladies, many of you, you know each other. You even know how one another has been bit. Encourage one another, okay? Encourage one another and help one another to cast that off in the right way, to look to the cross, to acknowledge the bite, but don't run away from ministry because of it. But keep loving it.